The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.
You know, Chuck, we ended the last show by predicting which teams we thought would have a really spectacularly bad weekend, potentially. And I think you picked the Titans and I picked the Ravens. Our predictions maybe didn't work out so well.
Nope.
You know, like, if I were a fan of one of those teams, I would taunt me right now and get a penalty, because apparently you cannot taunt anyone anymore in the NFL.
Yeah. Can't even look at anyone.
This is The Counter. I'm Chris Corman, joined by Charles McDonald. We work for For the Win. And we're going to talk some week two football and try to figure out what we learned. And still early in the season. Who knows how much to take from any of this, but we're starting to see some things that feel real, right?
Yeah, and even if they aren't, we're going to make them real. I mean, who knows?
Because like, that's what we have to do, right?
Right. There's 15 games left for each team, 16 weeks in total now that we have 17 games. So
right.
I don't really know what's real, but that's not going to stop me from getting these takes off.
That's right. We're going to go through Charles writes a column every Tuesday, The Four Verts, which happens to be his name on Twitter as well, at Four Verts. But basically breaking down four little mini trends that he sees and has noticed some really great things this week that we'll get to. Then we're just going to go through some games. I mean, it still feels germane to talk about each game that was played and try to figure out what's going on. And then we're going to close out the show by sort of doing a little mini power ranking, maybe seeing how we feel about the top of the NFL. We'll get to the sort of the bottom as part of the Four Verts. We'll take a look at all the 0-2 teams and try to predict which, if any, could actually make a playoff run. We'll work our way through all that and try to give some insight into what we're seeing in the NFL so far. And what has been a really, pretty interesting start. It's last year, we were talking about how bizarre everything was because there was nothing resembling a regular offseason due to the coronavirus pandemic. Everything felt up in the air, whether teams really had a chance to practice, whether, rookies had not been worked in the same way that they had before. There's a little bit of that this year, but teams were able to have full camp and really get going. So it's back to feeling normal and back to trying to figure out sort of what any of this early season noise means. And so we'll do that first through the Four Verts. You can find that at For the Win, ftw.usatoday.com. The headline this week, Four Verts. Kyler Murray is pushing backyard football to the max and the Browns are dumping on defenses. A little bit of a theme here. You looked at last week, you were sort of, your theme was, Charles, that you were just sad because the Falcons had played absolutely horrible football. And that was sort of the overriding mood of the Four Verts. This week, it feels like you're excited about some offensive football this week.
Yeah, well, last week, the Falcons, they left me in such a foul mood. I was like, I'm just going to jump on four teams and get this hate off my heart real quick so I can move on with the rest of the season.
I don't know if you moved on, though. You went on the Levitard show. You went on, you made other media appearances and talked about how bad the Falcons are. So
yeah, I went on the Levitard show yesterday, which was a bucket list goal for me. So that was really cool, and it went well. We briefly talked about the Falcons, and I said that they should just stop existing. And honestly, there are a surprising amount of Falcons fans that like agree with that. It's like that's the only way we can cure ourselves of this sickness, if they just stop existing. And honestly, I don't know when I'm not going to feel that way again. But this week, honestly, I was one of my favorite things to do every year is after week two, just go on Pro Football Reference and just kind of laugh at like what the projected stats are for players, because everything's so wacky this time of year. Like because, you know, if you have two good games like Russell Wilson had or Matt Stafford had, and you kind of project that to a full season, which is really just taking the averages of your two games and multiplying it by 17, you just get some absolutely wacky numbers. Like right now, Russell Wilson is, you know, quote unquote, on pace to throw like 51 touchdowns and no interceptions. And that stuff like that's never going to track, but it's funny to look at for me. So I started there with some offensive stuff, and then we got into, you know, Trevor Lawrence and then the 0-2 teams.
Yeah, let's start with the Browns, because you you know, there's a lot of film breakdown here of what the Browns are doing. We have talked in the past so much about the Baker Mayfield conundrum, right? Like the Browns are going to have to pay this dude $40 million or whatever a year. And he's just not, you know, he's fine. He's okay. Like he gets the job done, but he's probably not really a guy that you want to spend that much money on. Unless, of course, every attempt, you know, the last 15 attempts to find a franchise quarterback have gone horribly wrong, and you're just sort of paying for any semblance of stability. I guess the question, so you bring up here that basically Kevin Stefanski in his second year running this offense has just really figured out how to make all this talent work, right? Like one way, if you have Baker Mayfield and he's fine, you just sort of make it easy for him and you surround him with a ton of talent and get one of those guys open on each play. And Stefanski has masterfully found a way to do that, and it is really working. So why don't we start there? Why don't we go through what you've seen with this offense? It seems to have taken another step from where it was last year when the Browns finally got back to the playoffs, and this team was clearly ascendant. But we were sort of wondering, like, how good can it get given Mayfield's limitations? But you've seen some promising signs so far.
Yeah, I mean, this offense is just it's a machine. Like they through two games, like they very much look like a team that, one, already had a pretty like good scheme last year, and you know it can be kind of hard to come in and just, you know, get that thing off the ground. Because like I remember when the Falcons hired Kyle Shanahan in 2015, like that offense was not good,
right?
And you know part of that was due to personnel turnover, and they didn't have that much space to sign someone, and they kind of went all in 2016 on Alex Mack and Sanu and Taylor Gabriel and those guys. But, you know, it's not a guarantee that just because you get this coach who runs, I guess, like the hottest, you know, scheme in the NFL, where you're running like a lot of wide zone, outside zone, play action fakes off of that stuff,
right,
deep crossers. Like, you're not just guaranteed to be good at that. But, you know, Stefanski hit the ground running last year. And this year, like, they look even better. And I think what's so impressive about them is they're just so well-rounded on offense. So, like, when you look at the Chiefs, and what they're doing on offense, like they're averaging more yards per play than the Browns, but that's basically all due to Patrick Mahomes. They're not running the ball all that well. Like Clyde Edwards-Helaire has not had a good start to the season. So you see a weakness there. Seattle, they're a little bit more well-rounded than Kansas City, but no one's really matching like the straight up balance that the Browns have. And the precision of their offense is just insane right now. And I know that they've kind of gotten two easier tests to start the season because the Chiefs defense looks just terrible right now. And the Texans, you know, as we know, they're not as maybe not as bad as we thought, but they're definitely going through a rebuild right now. So they've gotten off to such a hot start, and they're just so fun to watch because they have so many things that they can do. And to me, like, this is one of these offenses, like, I know that when we look at analytics and numbers, it says, you know, you don't have to have a good running game to be good at play action, but I can't say that it hurts to have Nick Chubb and like arguably the best offensive line in the league. I mean, you go back and watch that game against the Texans and they are just mashing dudes up front, and Nick Chubb, all he needs is a crease to get going. And once he gets going downhill, or honestly, like even at the line of scrimmage, like that dude is impossible to tackle, and it's coming together in a way where they're just like a fine-tuned machine. Like all the play action fakes are crisp. They're right on time where everybody needs to be. And you know, now you're seeing an uptick in Baker's pass efficiency because, you know, sneakily Baker, in terms of just his raw, or not raw numbers, but like the efficiency numbers he had last year, he was just like slightly above average in terms of, you know, throwing the ball. But, you know, now, and I know 2 weeks, We haven't done all that much, but the Browns, they're second in the league in yards per attempt at 10.9 behind Seattle, which, you know, even through two games, like, that's really impressive and pretty difficult to do. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what happens when they play defenses that kind of have it together. Honestly, the only team in their division that seems to have that is Pittsburgh, because even Baltimore's defense has not played all that well this season. But it's just a really cool match between a coach who knows how he wants to call plays and just has the absolute perfect personnel to make all that happen.
We know that an actual running game is not, that actually producing in the running game is not essential for play action, right? Like, that there really is no direct correlation between, they have, they're running the ball a lot, so therefore play action works. We know that doesn't, like, the numbers bear out that it's not that important. But what you bring up here is that there is something important, and that is making play action actually look like you need to fake people out with it. Like, yeah. You bring up, and we talked about this last week, that Ryan Tannehill on one of his play action just sort of didn't sell it at all. And then you show examples here where, like, that's one thing Baker Mayfield and the rest of the Browns really seem to have bought into, is that they really need to sell the fakes, and it's certainly working. You know, I'm like, obviously they have a dangerous running attack, so that may play into it, but it really looks like this is something that you can observe on film, that they are making this work by really, like, just being practiced at it. Like, this is something that they worked on, and that is why they're having the success they are right now.
Yeah. Like, and it's not just Cleveland. Like, you go watch the 49ers, the Rams, even the Vikings, and you watch, to me, one of the most impressive things is, like, it really does look like a run play until the quarterback is about to pull the ball. Like, even Tennessee was doing that last year. I think maybe they're just getting used to a new offensive coach or something. But when you see the play starts out, and if you're looking at it from the defensive point of view, like, it really does look like a run play up until the very last second when Baker boots around and turns to the other side of the field. So and I think when you have someone like Nick Chubb in the backfield, you have to go all out to stop someone like that, and to get downhill and get through the offensive line. Like, you have to respect that to a degree, you know. Like, it's kind of hard to just totally ignore that, because if you back off and start playing the play action stuff, well, fine, we'll just give it to Nick Chubb and he'll continue to run for 6 yards per carry like he is right now. So it's just, like, they have so much talent on offense. They're super well coached. It's precise. Like, everyone's hitting their landmarks at the same time. And, you know, I brought up in the article that one difference between the play in Tennessee versus the play in Cleveland is, you know, Stefanski gave Baker, like, an actual outlet on the boot where he was coming, because you have the tight end coming across the other way, across the formation, which also looks like a run play called split zone. So all of it is so precise and well coached, and this is kind of what you want if you're going to be a play action heavy offense like we're seeing these teams run. You want everything to look the same, because, you know, just from a coaching perspective, that's how you get defensive players confused, when you just don't know what is going to happen until the ball declares and passes the line of scrimmage, or the quarterback is running the other way. And in some cases, it's just too late to do anything. And I think that is kind of like the big benefit of a well-coached play-action team.
All right, let's move on to the second tidbit here. I think this is maybe one of the better subheads ever written in For the Win history. Kyler Murray is controlling his own created chaos, just because it, like, perfectly summarizes what we're seeing from Kyler Murray and sort of what we've been waiting for, I think. Like, we all sort of had this feeling that this dude had the ability to do this, right? That, I mean, he could run, and he has, I mean, his arm talent is just unlike, really, I mean, it's different than anyone in the league. And we were just sort of waiting for it to come together. We've been debating over the years, is it him still learning? Is it Kingsbury's offense holding him back? Like, how is this eventually going to look? We know it's going to get to a point where Murray is really putting up numbers. How does it actually happen? And now it has. And it does seem, you know, we talked about it last week and you called it backyard football, I think, in the headline. Like, it just sort of seems like in the absence of Cliff Kingsbury really creating a passing game that works, Kyler Murray has taken it into his own hands and he is just sort of extending plays and making things happen as he goes. And it's phenomenal to see. You have the numbers in here. I have to find them. So he's on pace. Now, granted, this is a 17 game season.
Oh, this
so,
is my favorite.
Yeah. Like this is even more numbers than we're used to. Like, we're all thinking because we've grown up with 16 games. So it's bumped up because of an extra game, but he would end up close to 6,000 yards, 60 touchdowns in the air, and then running for another 430 with 17 touchdowns. And you write, it seems reasonable. And it does. Watching him, actually, like, I kind of feel like he'll run for more than 430 yards. But he's just, however it has happened, it has come together that we are now seeing this Kyler Murray that, I guess last year he was sort of like a dark horse. Like, that was a hit pick, right, for MVP. And now this year we're looking at him like, okay, that was the guy that people were talking about, and here he is.
Yeah, I guess we kind of jumped the gun on Kyler in terms of MVP talk last year. And then I kind of think by the end of the season, people were a little bit too low on him. And I think some of this might go to what guys like Mahomes and Lamar Jackson have done so early in the career, where you're talking about MVPs like on rookie contracts, which we have to kind of adjust our expectations. Like, those guys aren't normal.
Right.
And personally, I think Kyler is on a level where he could definitely win MVP, but sometimes it just takes a little bit longer. And we're so used to these guys like coming in and being good right now that, you know, Kyler, he's played 34 NFL games. He's still just getting started on his own career. And honestly, like, what they're doing right now, or really what he's doing right now, is I don't really know if I've seen anything like it before, because he almost seems more comfortable when everything breaks down than, you know, sitting there and figuring out what's going on. And I think that so much of his physical attributes help him with that, because to me, I don't think he ran the 40 at the combine, but he looks like someone who runs a 4.3 out there. And you see it when someone gets past one of their offensive linemen or they have a free rusher coming. He just spins around and darts away, and no one can even get near him. Like, the amount of separation that he can generate from pass rushers and chasing defenders, it's just such a nightmare to stop. And then you add on top of that ridiculously strong arm, superb deep ball accuracy, and you kind of have this quarterback who is like tailor made to play off script and when things are horrible, you know. And to be 24 years old and to have that much control over like bad situations where most quarterbacks would be taking sacks or, you know, throwing interceptions or throwing the ball out of bounds. Like, these are plays where he is just ripping it down the field and making big plays. Like, the one to Rondale Moore was my favorite, because, you know, defensive end came unblocked. He spun around, reverse field, ran to the sideline, and then just found Rondale Moore wide open down the field. And it adds such a stress to the defense, because if Kyler's running out the pocket, like, that's a credible threat that you have to adjust for at mid play. If you're a linebacker or a safety or a cornerback. And really, like, what Kyler is doing right now is he's making the defense play like two or three plays every single snap. So you have, obviously, you know, ball snap, and then you have the initial thing, whatever Cliff Kingsbury called, that usually gets covered. And then Kyler breaks away, and that's the second play you have to cover. And then sometimes he'll even get away from that. And he's finding these guys downfield. And then you get also the addition of Rondale Moore over Larry Fitzgerald. You get AJ Green coming in, and you still have Christian Kirk, who looks like he's improving. So all of a sudden, this wide receiver room got a lot better than it was last year. And they're all kind of built to play this backyard style of football where nobody needs to be on time. You just got to trust that Kyle's going to get you the ball.
Yeah, that was what I was going to talk about, is the makeup of the wide receiver group is so interesting, because, like, obviously DeAndre Hopkins does everything, right? He can run great routes. He's going to be great on jump balls. Like, he's just a freak. He's fantastic. AJ Green is what, 33 now, but you know, so he's not that guy anymore. He's not just going to beat cornerbacks with route running, with speed. I mean, he's got, like, that's just not who he can be. But if the game is that he's going to run around for a little bit and then ultimately have to beat a guy for a jump ball, like, that's something that AJ Green could probably be pretty good at. Those two are, and they're still establishing chemistry. He's been targeted 12 times with only 5 catches. Clearly they're trying to get the ball to him and figure it out. And then Rondale Moore is tiny and fast as can be, and is just going to sort of like run into open space. And if they already know how to get him the ball in those situations, like, you know, that's just going to be, there's so much promise there. He's such a dynamic player. You know, I think I read something that Kyler Murray actually like showed the personnel people from the Cardinals, like, hey, look at this guy breaking tackles. Look what he's doing in the open field at Purdue. And that partially led to them bringing him in, and it has worked like a charm. And then Christian Kirk is like a guy who is just perfect at sitting in open spaces, right? He's just going to sort of like figure out where he can and sort of duck in between defenders and make himself available. And it's just working out. Like, it's sort of like if there were a video game and you were building your backyard football team, you'd want to have different pieces, and they have those pieces. And so it's been a really fun offense to watch.
Yeah. The only thing I would say about this is be careful about trying to exist in this state the entire season, because it's a style of football that they're equipped to play. But it's also a pretty high variance style of football. Like, you can definitely see where this turns into, damn, we had a game where there's two interceptions or a fumble and strip sack. If you're playing maybe a defense that has a little bit more talent than the Vikings do, or I forget who they played last week, Titans do. But, you know, for now, it's working, and it's a lot of fun.
Right. Yeah, my favorite quarterback growing up was Randall Cunningham. So, I know what you're saying.
I'm lucky what I'm seeing.
It feels a little bit like that. All right. The third takeaway in Forverts is, you know, everyone is thinking and talking about Trevor Lawrence and the rookie QBs. And Trevor Lawrence, you noted here, is that this dude is just like, he is coming to the league and he is fearless, and maybe some people are saying maybe to his own detriment. Now Zach Wilson threw a ton of he threw 4 interceptions this week, so that sort of overshadowed the fact that Lawrence is still misfiring a little bit. But he is not showing the same level of accuracy that he showed at Clemson. You know, I think a lot of people would read what Trevor Lawrence is doing and say, oh, he's got to learn what he can and cannot do. He's got to dial it back. It's the pros now. He's really got to, you know, he's got to realize that the windows are tighter. And you're saying, no, like, just keep throwing.
Keep going, bro. Like, I know that Urban can't accept this, but you're not playing for this year or really even next year if you're Jacksonville. Like, you're just trying to evaluate. And at the end of the day, like, if Trevor Lawrence becomes who we think he's going to be, and so far, like, I have no reason to think he's not going to be excellent, because even in that game versus versus Denver, he's still ripping some throws in tight coverage, and making some things happen. But, like, you want him to stay like that, because in theory, like, he'll just get better at being an efficient, aggressive quarterback down the field, and you don't want to take that away because of, like, some interceptions he threw as a rookie on, like, maybe the least talented team in the league. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that he played well against Denver, because he didn't. Right. But again, like, that's not the point of what the season is about for the Jaguars. It's about testing limits, trying to figure out what Trevor and the rest of the team can do, and going into a shell and you know, stop trying hard. That doesn't really help anybody here. I'll also say this about Trevor's game yesterday, because you know, there were some people like on Twitter, just some fans, like just lumping in, oh, Trevor and Zach Wilson, they're both bad. And Trevor did not have the Zach Wilson game like that. That is not what happened here. And I know the final stat line is horrendous. I mean, 118 yards on 33 attempts is absolutely no bueno. But when you go back and watch it, he's throwing to guys who like just are not open at all. Like, he's still trying. Like he didn't like fold or quit. Like it just wasn't his day. And to be fair, Vic Fangio, really good defensive coordinator. The Broncos secondary, really, really, really good. Patrick Surtain looks awesome. You already have Kyle Fuller, Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson. I mean, that's one of the most talented secondaries in the league. And the Jaguars do not have one of the most talented receiving rooms in the league. So that's just kind of a tough matchup for them.
Right. And asking Trevor Lawrence to game manage now, it's just like, what is the point? Like, that's not who he is or ever going to be. You know, a lot of people applauded Mac Jones for – you know, he played pretty conservatively against the Jets. You know, he wasn't taking as many risks. And people sort of read that as like, well, you know, he realized that the Patriots defense had things under control and Zach Wilson was having a bad game. And he just needed to sort of get the win by playing it simple. Like, there's absolutely no point to ever doing that to Trevor Lawrence. That's not who he is. That's not who he's going to be. That's not why you picked him number one. Like, you need to let him let it rip. And if his growing pains are more, you know, are a little bit more grotesque now, that's just sort of the price of having Trevor Lawrence and plopping him into, like you said, this team that is just nowhere near ready to compete. I mean, you look at this roster and it's just not there. And unfortunately, it sure seems like Urban Meyer did not bring any magic with him from college football. You know,
And the last thing I'll say about Trevor is just – we'll get to Zach Wilson later, but just watch the difference in the fourth quarter of those games between Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. Wilson, like, after he threw that fourth pick, he kind of folded, and that was it for him, which I can relate to, but I'm also not trying to be. when I'm compounding on bad mistakes, I'll give up a little bit, sure. But that's not what you're supposed to do in the NFL. But when Trevor is making some of these mistakes, he's coming right back out there saying, well, I'm going to hit it next time.
Right.
And that's the kind of confidence that you have to have. And he's talented.
And if you take that away from him, like, what do you have? You know, you just don't like.
And he's talented enough to believe that about himself, too.
Right. All right. Final part of the four verts this week is trying to assess which of the 0-2 teams has a chance to rebound and actually make the playoffs. 0-2 teams right now: Jets, Jags, Colts, Giants, Vikings, Falcons, Lions. you have discarded all those teams except the Colts and Vikings. Those are the only two that you see with a realistic chance. The Colts are, you know, Carson Wentz has like what, 5 sprained ankles? Like, I can't even keep up with what injuries he has right now. But he apparently sprained both ankles. He had a different injury in preseason. He's looked like Carson Wentz, which is not a good thing when he's in there. The Colts are not protecting him all that well, but it's just the offense is not working there. I think you really zeroed in on the Vikings. What do you see here that makes you think this team could make the turnaround?
It's tough to make it's tough to make the playoffs as an 0-2 team to start the season. And maybe that will change a little bit as we move forward with like a bigger sample size of 7 playoff teams and a 17-game season.
Right.
But like, just think logistically about it. Like, if you're under the old schedule, 16-game schedule, if you go 0-2 to start the season, like, do you realize how thin your margin of error is for the rest of the season to make the playoffs? Like, in order for you to go 10-6, you have to go 10-4 the rest of the way. And how likely is that after you start 0-2? Like, that's a pretty tough spot to be in. But I think the Vikings are a little bit different because, unlike most 0-2 teams, like when you look at the Jets, Jaguars, Falcons, Lions, these Vikings, like, they have some talent on offense. Dalvin Cook played out of his mind against the Cardinals. And, you know, that's someone that you can rely on each week. You know, Justin Jefferson is one of the best receivers in the league. Adam Thielen, maybe not quite as good as he once was when Stephon Diggs was there, but still one of the best number two receivers in the league. And if Christian Darrisaw, their first round tackle, gets back, like, you're going to have an extra, you have an extra layer of protection on the offensive line for Kirk Cousins. So this is a group of skill talent that can actually score points in bunches when they want to. I don't, right now they're a little bit reliant on explosive plays and not like that consistent on a down to down basis, but you have the talent to get frisky with some of these better teams. And that's what's going to take for you, you know, to get past Green Bay. If you're trying to win a game there this season and sneak into that seventh playoff spot. I mean, let me be clear. Like, they still have a, you know, they've dug themselves into a hole to get out of by starting the season 0-2. But it's possible that they can turn this around, because unlike the other teams, they have like an unusual level of talent at the top end of their offense.
Right. I mean, important to note too that so the Vikings have lost both games away from home. You know, so they haven't had a home game yet. They lost 34-33 to the Cardinals on, you know, a last second field goal that should have gone through, right? It was like 37 yards or something. So, you know, if you look a little bit closer at the games, it's, you know, there's some coin flip games here that didn't go their way.
Yeah.
You know, this recent one. And
also I'll say this, the Vikings, they got pretty unlucky, against Arizona. There's a play that I didn't put in the article that I tweeted out yesterday where, like, Kyler, and this was actually a crucial play that got them in the scoring position, and they ended up scoring a touchdown on the drive. But it's like 2nd and 10 on midfield. Kyler throws a pass that's just woefully short. It bounces off of a nose tackle that's rushing him, bounces up into the air. A Vikings defender tries to catch it, I think, bounces off of his hands, and then it lands in Max Williams' hands, like 10 yards away from the initial bat by the nose tackle. Then he runs like another 40 yards and gets into the red zone. And, you know, like, that's just the Vikings. Like, they're one of those teams like the Falcons and the Chargers where that stuff is just liable to happen to them at any time. So they probably won't make the playoffs because they're the Vikings and they're cursed, but they also have a chance to. And also, you know, I wrote this section right before Monday Night Football started. And because I was like, what, Packers ain't going to lose to the Lions? And then they were down at one point. I was like, oh, my God, if the Packers lose this game, I'm going to go scorch earth and then the rest of the year, because I have to restart this.
Oh, yeah. Well, luckily that did not happen, because that would be just confusing and I wouldn't even know what to say about it. Let's jump into the games now, go through. Again, we'll just do every game, you know, still early enough to talk about where each team is and what we're learning. Just going to go sort of in chronological order, and that does bring us to the Packers winning 35-17 on Monday night. You know, it's we all predicted the Packers would get better. You know, that week one, the blowout by the Saints was not indicative of who they were. You know, they come away with this 35-17 win, which you look at and probably say, oh, they did, but it's still felt sort of like the same. I don't know. I mean, I'm still not like I somehow come away less. I'm actually more down on the Packers this week than I was in week one. I really thought week one was a fluke. And now this is like, oh, wait, there's a whole lot of cracks here.
Yeah, it's like two things for me. One, Lions probably not as bad as we thought they were going to be. Like, they're not going to win many games, but I think on offense, at least, like, that looks like a pretty well-coached team. I think through two games, Anthony Lynn's doing a pretty good job. They had that crazy comeback against San Francisco that fell just short last week. They were down 41-10, and they came back and made a game 41-33 before the game ended. But just in general, when you look at the rosters, and I know that the Packers have some injuries, they should be blowing this team out, man. Like, right. It really shouldn't be close. And like you said, the final score, 35-17, doesn't quite tell the whole story of the game. Like, the Lions kind of looked like the Lions in the second half. But I think if you're a Packers fan, you got to be concerned about this front on the defense, because they're just not making, like, any explosive plays in the backfield. They, for the season, through two games, they're the only team that hasn't recorded a single tackle for loss through eight quarters of football. Like, even defenses that we know are really bad have been able to at least get in the backfield one time, and they have one sack for the whole season. That's pretty alarming. I don't know if this is a thing where they're just kind of trying to figure out how to play within the new scheme of this defensive coordinator, Joe Barry, but you've invested a lot of money to not have a lot of production up there. I mean, Dean Lowry's got paid. Kenny Clark's got paid. Za'Darius Smith is hurt right now, but he's got paid. Preston Smith has got paid. So it's right. Not like you aren't trying to get a good defensive line. They've just gotten off to a super duper slow start, which is obviously going to put a lot of pressure on your secondary, which means more time for teams to throw at Kevin King.
Yeah, never, never what you want to see as a Packers fan. What about the Lions? Anything else there? Just, I mean, as you said, like, seems like probably going to be maybe a little bit better than we thought. It feels like the right formula, right? We all loved a lot of their assistant coach hires. It seemed like Dan Campbell at least got that right? Like, he came in, gave this crazy man press conference. That's obviously who he is, right? He's the rah-rah guy who's going to try to get people pumped up. But does he have the people in place to build a team that can work and to, you know, put the schemes in place that can eventually work? Do we have any better idea of that at this point?
I think it's a good thing that they look competent,
right?
Because I don't know if they have the players where they should be, like, because let's be fair to them. They've had a pretty tough start to the season. I mean, we're talking about before the season, 49ers and the Packers as potential Super Bowl contenders, and they got the Ravens next week. So this is a real, you know, tough test for not only a rookie coaching staff, but a team that's going through a major rebuild. And I think for them to look competent is just it would make me feel good as a Lions fan about the direction of this franchise and the coaches that they have in place. Now, you still got to hit and find a quarterback, because I don't think that you want to do this Jared Goff thing long term, even though he's had some nice moments over the past two games. But for a team that is losing a lot of games this year, I'm pleasantly surprised by the direction they seem to be headed in.
All right, let's go to the Sunday night game. Baltimore Ravens 36, Kansas City Chiefs 35. Lamar Jackson finally beats the Chiefs in, I don't know, probably one of the better regular season games ever played at M&T Bank Stadium. Just a fantastic football game. Like I said in the opening, I really thought that the Ravens were potentially doomed in this game and would just, you know, they had so much trouble with the Chiefs. The Chiefs ate the blitz alive. You know, that Wink Martindale, that's what he does. He blitzes. And Patrick Mahomes always had an answer. His numbers were just astronomical. And then on the flip side, Lamar Jackson just couldn't really seem to figure out what was happening with the Chiefs defense. They couldn't put it together. And it looked like it would be that way early on, right? Lamar Jackson throws an interception, I don't know, the third play of the game. He misses on a deep ball in the first pass and then throws an interception. I think Sammy Watkins actually sort of slipped.
Yeah, he did slip.
Yeah, it wasn't Lamar's fault, but it just felt right. Like, if you go back and do a Twitter search for that time period in Baltimore, everyone is, you know, jumping into the Inner Harbor. And
I would not recommend doing that.
Yeah, no, it's disgusting.
It might come disgusting. Out with like a fourth arm.
Yeah. But this team, like the Ravens eventually found a way. Didn't have Ronnie Stanley. They've like 12, 13 guys injured and came away with this win. The thing that stuck with me the most is that Wink Martindale's flexibility. I said that he kept blitzing and blitzing Mahomes in previous games, didn't work. And he just rewrote what he wanted to do. Now, some of that this week, some of that's probably because every cornerback they had in the roster seemed to get hurt. He necessarily had to approach things differently. But having that flexibility to do that is a pretty impressive coaching feat. And it just feels like a really big win for the Ravens. A team that we thought was going to be good, and then the injuries decimated them, and it was not really clear what they would be. Still have a ways to go, but this was a promising step, I think.
Yeah, and me, can you guys just, like, respect, put some respect on Lamar Jackson's name? Like,
I mean,
obviously, the first pick, Sammy slipped. Right. Second pick, awful. But, and I mean, as a Lamar Jackson fan, I got no problem saying that. That was a terrible pass. I'm sure he would say it too. But, like, I feel like people don't understand how rare it is to find a guy that when you're down, what, three offensive linemen that you had starting last year with Ronnie Stanley didn't play last week because, I mean, he's clearly not healthy. Orlando Brown is in Kansas City. Tyree Phillips got hurt last week against the Raiders.
Right.
You are down three offensive linemen in a league where offensive line talent is really, really difficult to come by. And he just says, okay, come get on my shoulders. We got this. And I think that maybe people just are against it because it doesn't look like the same way as it, your normal quarterback does. Like when you see Mahomes throwing for 11 yards per attempt, you're like, oh, well, why doesn't Lamar do that? Well, because he's not Mahomes. He's right. Lamar. And what he's going to do is he's going to open up your run game where you have, Tyson Williams running for 5.9 yards a carry. Devonta Freeman had a 31-yard carry, and I don't think he's run more than like 10 yards since 2017. This guy is such a magnet for other defenders. It's just a rare type of presence to have on your team. And then, you know, after he throws those, I thought after he threw that second interception, he was pretty good, like throwing the ball the rest of the game. And then he had the broken play to Marquise Brown that looked just like the play from last year against the Browns on Monday night. I mean, when you're down, like, it's good to have a player like Lamar Jackson that can just maximize like every inch of your offense, even if like the throwing isn't going to be pristine clean all the time.
Right. The Ravens defense has given up, I think, more than 30 points in each game. I mean, like, obviously a lot to be figured out there. The Ravens are not a team that has paid for pass rush in recent years, but it looks like Odafe Owe, the first round pick, is going to be a really good player. You know, I think that defense will come together. The Chiefs, on the other hand, their defense is something is not working with the Chiefs defense. It has just been really, really bad. Like, probably bad enough to make me rethink a little bit right now. Like, are the Chiefs who we think they are? Because the offense is going to be there, right? Like, there's no doubt that Patrick Mahomes has that figured out. But the defense right now it seems like a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, they're awful. And actually, before we recorded, I was chatting with Derek, who we had on last week, Derek Klassen, and he made the point where he was like, I think the Chiefs are just giving up on run defense, which is that's what it looks like to me, because they got trampled by the Browns last week, even though they won that game. Like, Nick Chubb went absolutely insane, even though he fumbled. And then this week against the Ravens, 251 yards, 6.1 yards per carry, 3 touchdowns. That you can't be doing, even with the team against Lamar Jackson, that's not really acceptable production for your defense. And now, you know, the run defense has been weak for a couple years now, but the pass defense is starting to look a little shaky too. And I don't really know how that's going to get fixed. I kind of don't like this Chris Jones at defensive end experiment. Just put him back at 3-tech where he belongs. Like, it's a testament to Chris Jones that he can be, such a good player inside and out. But I just think he's probably better served for this defense at this time. On the interior, playing more snaps there. So this defense is actually in a spot where, you know, 2 weeks could be an overreaction, but they look right now like they're in a spot where they could like ruin a potential playoff run for them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it certainly looks, you know, the Super Bowl came down to the fact that the Chiefs' offensive line was not, you know, like that's where everything broke down, right? And it just seems like now, and they spent all the entire offseason trying to fix that, and now it seems like the defensive line particularly may be the problem that dooms them this year. I think Chris Jones only had one tackle in that game, which just like seems like that just doesn't seem like a fact that can actually happen, like that can be true, you know? He's too good to be that stifled. All right, where are we going next? Let's go. Let's go Titans Seahawks. This is another one. You know, we were wondering, like, are the Titans going to figure it out? And they figured it out by having Ryan Tannehill throw the ball to Julio Jones, which turns out to be like, if Arthur Smith leaves and your play action offense that you try to build in his wake doesn't quite work, then just the next week, just throw it to Julio Jones a bunch. And turns out that can work.
Yeah. I was watching, so here in New York, for some reason, the Falcons just keep showing up on TV here. And they're going to show up again next week when they play the Giants. But I was watching the Falcons-Bucks game on Fox. And then I had the Red Zone illegal stream up on my computer. And they were at a commercial break. So I flipped to the Red Zone stream on my computer. And the first thing I see is Julio catching like a 50-yard pass from Ryan Tannehill. Yeah. Oh,
right.
God.
It's just, pain.
Yeah, pain. Just trade that away. But, hey, yeah, maybe you should throw to Julio more often. And you know, even with the production that Julio had, like they could have had a better game because AJ Brown dropped a couple of passes as well. And then they did the classic Tennessee thing. When you need to get going, you got to give it to number 22. And I can't even imagine how sore Derrick Henry was after that game. 35 carries, 182 yards, 3 touchdowns, chipped in another 6 catches for 55 yards. 41 touches throughout the course of a game. I know it went to overtime, but he had more touches than Ryan Tannehill did at pass attempts, which is kind of a crazy thing to consider in this day and age, even with someone like Derrick Henry, who's like just the total bell cow back, like the premier bell cow back in this league. So, you know, it was a good game for the Titans to get back and start scoring points again, just so you can remember, oh, like they have dudes on offense. You know, one game sample from last week where Chandler Jones turned into like the Hulk doesn't have to be a referendum on your entire season. You can get things back going. And they did on offense for the most part. It was kind of a weird game. It came down to like one of the last plays, but they started looking like the offense that people were projecting them to be. Like, I don't think that this team is a Super Bowl contender, but they're certainly not as bad as they put forth against the Cardinals, excuse me.
Right. Seahawks put up 30 points. You know, I think we all feel like Russell Wilson has looked fine. You know, he got off to that incredible start last season and then petered out. He's sort of been that a streaky player for a lot of his career. He's not quite as good early on this season, but, you know, he's Russell Wilson. It looks like the same dude. The Seahawks defense, on the other hand, you know, they – it's a tough task, right? Julio Jones and AJ Brown, but it just does not seem like they have answers on the back end with the defensive back group. And you know, we thought maybe that a good pass rush would change the equation. That hasn't really fully manifested itself yet. How are you feeling about the Seahawks at this point?
I don't know. Like They look to have a pretty good offense, but I think that, you know, no one should be surprised by that. Dude, Tyler Lockett is insane right now. And then, you know, at some point, DK Metcalf is going to pick up his production too. This offense has too much firepower in the passing game for them to be bad. But I just kind of wonder how good this defense is. I don't really have a firm grasp on that. And you know, next week against the Vikings, that's always such a weird game. Whenever the Vikings and the Seahawks play, something weird is bound to happen. So maybe next week is a week that they start to pick it back up. But so far, the Seahawks defense, they just look okay, like middle of the road average with, you know, some juice off the edge with guys like Darrell Taylor, you know, who I predicted as a breakout player. That's pretty good. Hey, right. Toot my own horn. you know, when you have like a mediocre defense with a really explosive offense, that's a pretty solid way to get to the playoffs. But beyond that, I'm not sure if this team has like a real postseason run in them, but we'll figure that out in the next couple of weeks. Cause you know, like, I guess the theme of today is 2 weeks is a really small sample size. And we still need to figure out who these teams are and you know, honestly just how healthy they are at the end of the season.
Right. I just realized that we're like 50 minutes into this podcast and we've only talked about 3 games. So I'm gonna speed it up a little bit and plow through some of these games. Let's talk Cowboys Chargers. This is a game that feels like there's not a ton to learn here, right? Like the Cowboys looked okay. The Chargers shot themselves in the foot, but a bunch of times, but Justin Herbert looked fantastic. Dak Prescott had a decent day. I mean, it certainly feels like he's back, made some like incredible throws. There were none of the evidence of where he wasn't throwing the ball well in week one. I mean, it just looks like he's back. Tony Pollard, is he better than Zeke right now? I mean,
I definitely think he's better than Zeke right now. Zeke just, yeah. he just doesn't have the juice that he had when he got drafted.
Right. Yeah, just, I mean, that happens to running backs, man.
Hey, at least he got paid.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, this game, I don't know. You know, the Cowboys are in a putrid division. You know, I think they have the Eagles next. That's the Monday night game. So, I don't see really anyone standing in their way. And the Chargers, it just seemed like a team, you know, they have a first-year coach, and it just seems like they have to sort of put things together, but the pieces are there.
Yeah. I'm just kind of surprised that both teams didn't score more points in this game.
Right.
And I guess the person that I was most excited by was Micah Parsons. I mean, they put him at defensive end because of injuries, and he just looked like he was a veteran out there. I know that he was going up against someone who was a backup for the Chargers, but still, that's his first game as a full-time defensive end. And like, wow, that's a really special player if you can do both at a pretty high level. And that's just an incredible chess piece to have. So I'm excited to see how he continues to grow too. But
yeah
just kind of like Tennessee and Seattle, just kind of a weird game.
Yeah. Yeah. Micah Parsons is the truth, man. He's great. We talked Cards, Vikings already. Let's Bucks, Falcons. You want to skip that one? You can skip it if you want.
There's nothing to say. The Falcons they got close at one point, and then they just got destroyed. They've played one good quarter of football so far.
Yeah, that's not encouraging. Touched on the New England Patriots 25, New York Jets 6 game already. Bill Belichick was just, I don't know. Like, what's a metaphor? Dumb. Like a 12th grader just dunking a 8th grader's head in the toilet or something? I mean, I don't
really know what there is to say about Zach Wilson's performance. The last two picks that he threw, I've just never really seen anything like it. And I was there in person for the I'm Seeing Ghosts game by Sam Darnold. I don't think that was as bad as this. Because the last two picks he threw, the third one was, I don't know what he was doing. Like, he was just getting baited so hard by the cornerback. And even then, like, even if the quarterback wasn't there, I don't think that pass was getting close to the receiver. And then the last one he threw, it looked like a punt. And Devin McCourty was a punt returner on the play. I just don't understand what happened there. And then after that, he just kind of folded. And honestly, Mac Jones is lucky that Zach Wilson played so bad, because Mac didn't really play all that well either, because he's just not testing anything down the field. Ultra, ultra conservative game plan. I just don't know how far that's going to take you against teams that have NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah, they Patriots get Trent Brown back next week. I mean, maybe that gives Mac Jones a little bit more time to make those throws. But, yeah, he really seemed to shut it down. I mean, he completed, 22 passes for 180-some yards. I mean, it was just not there yet. And that's the question with Mac Jones, right? Like, we knew he could complete passes and make reads, but, really pushing the ball downfield is going to be the question for him. We touched on the Browns offense, just clobbering we're a Texans podcast. I forgot. So I don't want to be mean to the Texans, but, Texans stood in there a little bit. 31-21 is the final there. We touched on the Browns. So let's get to the Texans. The bad, horrific news. I wish I should have planned it so that Steven Ruiz could have showed up for this moment, like just patched him in right now, because Davis Mills is going to have to play quarterback for the Texans.
Yeah.
Because our pal Tyrod is out for some period of time. He's got a hamstring injury. That can't be good. That's the Thursday night game too, right? It's Texans Panthers. Oh boy.
It's full of bait. Honestly, the only thing I have to say about this game is, man, Tyrod is just the worst luck. Like, because before he got hurt, he was absolutely balling in that game. 10 for 11, 125 yards, one touchdown. And then he ran for a 15-yard touchdown where at the end of the run, you could see he clearly wasn't feeling good and came out after that. But I mean, this is the best football that I've seen Tyrod play in a long time. And he just doesn't seem to have any good luck left for him. So, and you know, Davis Mills against the Panthers defense, that's a toughie. Good luck.
Broncos 23, Jags 13. We talked about Trevor Lawrence. Tell me, are the Broncos good, man? The Broncos might be good, right?
They might be. The Jaguars are really, really, really bad. Their defense really didn't have an answer for anything. I know like they didn't score a whole bunch of points, but honestly, I feel like the Broncos not scoring more points was more on them than it was the Jaguars. And I think that Vic Fangio has got to be happy. He's got a quarterback that's not turning the ball over a million times a game. So I feel like if you're a Broncos fan, you're cautiously optimistic right now because the defense looks like the real deal, but I'm right. still want to see what Pat Shurmur and Teddy Bridgewater have for some of these tougher defenses because, I mean, the Jaguars' defense is just a total mess right now, especially through the air.
Yeah. Yeah. The question is what Bridgewater does when he's going to have to try to come from behind, right? Or, like, keep up with somebody. That's really what we'll have to see. But so far, we sort of predicted that Fangio went with Bridgewater because he wanted somebody who was going to protect the ball and just sort of keep things running. And Bridgewater's done that. I mean, that's who he is and that's who he's been. And he's very consistent about it. And it seems to be working so far. Let's go to Bears Bengals. Andy Dalton got injured. So we got to see a little bit of Justin Fields. Probably not a game plan specifically for him. I don't know how different they really would be, but it seemed a little bit limited what they were doing with him. He was 6 of 13 for 60 yards, rushed 7 times for 35 yards. So we got like a little sense of what Justin Fields is, but what'd you take away from this game?
Start him. Like I don't know. Once I saw that Andy Dalton got hurt, I found a stream for that game so fast. Like I was like, oh, let's go. Like we get to see what Justin Fields is up to. And honestly, like from what I saw, I thought he played pretty well outside of, that horrible interception that he threw where, you know, you got to see the peeling guy coming off. Like he's standing right in front of your face. Don't just muscle memory it and throw the ball. Think a little bit. But, you know, he had a pass to Allen Robinson, which at first – on the broadcast angle looked a little, inaccurate, but then when they flip the camera around and you see where the ball's coming in inside, it was a perfect throw, dropped right in the bucket and Allen Robinson just couldn't get it in. And then they had another pass that was dropped. I mean, you see the upside, you see the rushing ability. And I just don't really know why the Bears are so insistent on, sticking with Andy Dalton. I mean, Matt Nagy's barely brave enough to say it himself. He's got PR people doing it for him. Just do the right thing. Like even if you don't believe that Dalton or that Fields is better than Dalton, you're not really gaining anything from keeping him on the bench. So, that was my Bears take. And on the other side, Bengals, that was pathetic, dude. Like just the whole offensive operation, like just try again next week. That was bad. I mean, Joe Burrow had a streak where he threw 3 interceptions on 3 straight passes, and I don't think all of them were his fault, but damn, dude, like you're supposed to be maybe our expectations were too high coming into the season right now, coming off the injury, but you're supposed to be, I think, a little bit more polished than they look, and the Bears defense just absolutely destroyed them. And I think, another funny stat that now that we have 2 weeks worth of games is the Bengals have allowed the highest percentage of sacks in the league at 13.6%. 13.6%.
Maybe should have drafted an offensive lineman. Just gonna throw it out there. Yeah. The Bears have the Browns this week. That could be a good game. I mean, it'd be much nicer to watch Justin Fields, a dynamic guy who could make plays, rather than Andy Dalton. I don't know the status of his knee injury, but it certainly feels like a time to just go for it, right? Like the Browns are going to put up points, so you might as well put in a quarterback who might be able to match it.
Yeah.
Rams 27, Colts 24. Big news here is probably that Carson Wentz went down, and that throws the Colts season into disarray. Anything from the Rams, though? I mean, it's obviously we're seeing Matt Stafford like is a huge upgrade over Jared Goff. You know, it feels like this team will probably be there at the end.
Yeah, my thing is just Matthew Stafford looks so comfortable and so good in this offense. And maybe if you're a Rams fan, you're a little concerned you gave up 8 yards per attempt to Carson Wentz. Because, you know, Raheem Morris, and maybe this is something that just works itself out as the season progresses, but, you know, they're not quite as dominant as they were under Brandon Staley. Last year, the secondary hasn't been quite as effective, where they were just locking guys down all season last year. But, hey, you got the quarterback you were looking for, and that alone makes you a championship contender. So, you know, I'm super excited to see what this Rams offense takes or how they kind of take form over the rest of the season. And that Buccaneers game next weekend, that's like a must-watch game. Because I think these are like the two heavyweights in the NFC, and we're going to get them on national television in the afternoon on Sunday. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it'll be great. Yeah, I mean, Colts, I don't – like, it's just – I'm not even sure what to say. Like, they banked on Carson Wentz. We were never very high on that in the first place. Wentz now has dealt with injuries, which he's done for most of his career. And yeah, I feel for my friends in Indiana because it's hard to get excited for what's going on there right now, I think. Just not very promising so far. Raiders 26, Steelers 17. Are the Raiders real, man? Is this it? Did John Gruden figure it out?
Derek Carr looks good. Like, and honestly, I think the
MVP talk for Derek Carr right now.
I can't ever bring myself to say that until he has it in his hand. He looks good. He's just playing with so much confidence and so much control. And you know, there were points last week in the Ravens game where you're like, oh, come on, Derek. Like, we know you're better than this. Like, we know that you have the physical talent to be great. Just go do it, dude. And this week, we kind of saw him start to open it up. And this is a tough Pittsburgh defense. They're not just any slouch defense that you can come in and roll over, like we saw with the Bills last week. And Derek Carr, 382 yards, 10 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns. The bomb to Henry Ruggs was like one of the best passes I think he's ever thrown. And now if you're talking about an offense that can legitimately get Henry Ruggs involved as a deep threat, you are going to score a ton of points. Because Darren Waller, another extrapolated stat that I didn't put in the four words, but he's on pace for 220 targets this year, which is absolutely hilarious. That's definitely skewed by getting 19 against the Ravens. He only had 7 right. this week. But right. Yeah, that was pretty funny. But you're talking about Ruggs, Waller, and Renfro as a slot. And Renfro, I think, is a pretty solid player. That's enough to score some points if the offensive line can hold up. And, you know, for the most part, they were all right yesterday. I think pass blocking was a little better than run blocking for them. But this Raiders team, John Gruden, the coach, pretty good. John Gruden, the GM, is killing John Gruden, the coach, at times.
Yeah, yeah. The Steelers' offense is broken. Ben Roethlisberger apparently is now dealing with a pec injury. So yeah, sure he is. Maybe we'll get to watch some Mason Rudolph. I think he's second on the depth chart.
I got nothing to say about the Steelers offense.
The Matt Canada-ness of it is not there. Like, what I've watched, like, it's nothing. They're not doing anything interesting at all.
Because Ben can't sit under center the entire game. Like, I don't think he's like physically capable of doing that. Which is what I think me and Steven were talking about before the season. It's like, dude, Ben Roethlisberger is not going to sit there under center. He's going to want to sit back in shotgun and scan the field and not have to like move during his drop. That's where he is in his career right now. And I wonder if Pittsburgh is kind of kicking us off a little bit for maybe not being more aggressive after one of these quarterbacks in the draft this year.
49ers 17, Eagles 11. I feel like another one of those games where, like, I'm not sure we learned a ton. Like, right? Like, the 49ers were supposed to win. They found a way. Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, like, it was not perfect in by any means. Like,
I thought he sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how long they can wait. And then on the Eagles side, you know, like, team needs to I have a second year QB who only got a few games experience last year, and it showed at times.
Yeah, the Eagles played a real football team this week, and it was a little bit more difficult for them. Because like what the Falcons did last week, I just don't even understand. Like, there were guys wide open. They weren't covering the quarterback on zone reads. Like, I don't understand how you're not prepared for that. But this week, you know, you had a tougher test against the 49ers, and they were still able to run the ball pretty, like, fairly effectively. But, you know, the passing game was pretty inconsistent. And on the flip side, like, Jimmy G, he wasn't hitting anything that wasn't just, like, super predetermined for him. Like, even on some dropback stuff, there were guys wide open, and he's just missing them in clean pockets. And then you kind of see, as the game goes on, Shanahan's like, man, bump this. We're running screens. I'm sorry. We're done here. So I find it interesting that over the years with Garoppolo, there have been so many times where Shanahan gets frustrated, but, you know, here he is still trying him back out there. Like, I just want to see, you know, what is holding them back from putting Trey Lance in, considering what they spent for him. And I don't even think Trey Lance got in the game against the Eagles.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Panthers 26, Saints 7. Are the Panthers the 2-0 team least likely to make the playoffs?
I don't know. This defense is pretty good.
Oh, no.
I can't say it's because of Sam Darnold. Like, I can't bring myself to say that. But throughout the first 2 weeks, I was kind of skeptical. Like, when they beat up on the Jets. Like, all right, that's the Jets.
Right.
But, you know, you had a Saints team coming in that scored 38 points on the Packers relatively easily, and they just shut them the hell down. Phil Snow had no idea who he was when Matt Rhule brought him on. He seems to be pretty good at this.
I was gonna say, has he changed what he's doing, or is this just like a Big 12 defense that he's adapted to work in the NFL?
Well, one interesting thing is their front is super duper athletic. You have Brian Burns off the edge. They signed Hassan Reddick. You already had Shaq Thompson in the middle of the field, Derek Brown at defensive tackle. Like, these are guys that, like, relative for their size and their position, are all really, really athletic. And Phil Snow, he's just going to bring it. He doesn't really care. Like, he's one of those guys that's just kind of going to blitz a lot. And you have the athletes, and not only are they, like, supreme athletes, but they're also, like, polished players too. Brian Burns, for how young he is super duper polished. As a pass rusher, he had a spin move against Ryan Ramczyk, one of the best right tackles in the league. That was just insane. So, you know, I want to see how this keeps going. They should probably bully the Texans again this coming Thursday, but then they get the Cowboys after that. And I think that's going to be the real test of, you know, where is this Panthers defense? Because honestly, a little bit of that game was Jameis is doing some Jameis stuff. Like, he kind of reverted back to Tampa Bay, but that Tampa Bay Jameis, but that's going to happen from time to time. I mean, he's Jameis. He's going to have the games where he throws for 4 touchdowns and 300 yards, and he's going to have the game where he throws for 300 yards and 4 interceptions.
Yeah. Yeah. The Saints, I mean, have had so many injuries. They were down 8 assistant coaches due to COVID. You know, it feels like there's a lot going on that explains why this team has not looked good this week. You know, looked pretty good last week against Green Bay. I mean, a lot of that was Green Bay being just awful, but I don't think it's surprising that this team is high variance right now. It's really just a question of what they level off at as the season goes on. The Bills trounced the Dolphins, just utterly destroyed the Dolphins, and yet it was 35-0. I'm not sure, like, Josh Allen is not, like, he's not quite on the trajectory he was last year.
No, my biggest takeaway from this was, holy crap, Dolphins, you got to do some soul searching, because that was bad. I mean, Tua got hurt, but honestly, I know he only played like 6 plays or something like that, but the way that those 6 plays looked, he was not about to do anything out there that day. You know, under pressure, he dropped back 6 times, was sacked twice. Like, that's really bad. And I know that this is a really small sample size of 6 dropbacks, but his QBR for the game was 0.1. Like, just he looked really, really bad out there. And then Jacoby Brissett came in and didn't fare that much better. And maybe the Bills defense is getting back in action, but the Dolphins, like they gotta fix this offensive line. That's basically what they're gonna have to spend the entire next offseason on. Austin Jackson, the left tackle they drafted out of USC last year, can't play. I don't know if right tackle's in his future, but the guy, he is so overmatched at left tackle. I don't really know what you can do with that. And then the rest of the guys, they need to be replaced too. So, you know, this is a team that's going to struggle to run. They're going to struggle to pass protect. And if Jacoby Brissett plays for an extended amount of time, that's a guy who likes to hold onto the ball. So just expect these sacks to pile up, and it's going to be all on the Dolphins defense, which, you know, as we know from a year to year trend, it's kind of hard to rely on elite defense to stay in the lead.
Right. The Dolphins and Jets are both allowing quarterback pressure on more than 50% of snaps, which and I think they're the only two teams in the league that are even close to that number. That is not a way to win football games, especially with a rookie quarterback in one and an injury prone quarterback, or like you said, Jacoby Brissett.
Welcome into another
where he's just sort of, you know, not a guy who's going to get rid of it quickly. Really plays to his weakness. So I guess if you're a defensive end in the AFC East, you're pretty excited about the fact that you play those lines twice. But all right, Thursday Night Football, man, can we just – let's not talk about the NFC East anymore. The Washington football team, 30, I got nothing to say about the Giants, game. 29. Yeah, I mean, the Giants continue toward the path of just undoing everything. I don't know. And then
the only thing I have to say about the Giants is next week is Saquon Barkley's get-right game against the Falcons.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He'll figure it out. Love Saquon. Taylor Heineke, I mean, I don't, you know, he's fine, right, but he's not an NFL quarterback for the long term. So,
it was whatever. It was weird.
Not a lot. Yeah.
It was a close game, but I wouldn't say I enjoyed watching it.
I wouldn't say it was fun or.
Yeah. Not every close game is a good game.
Good, like, football.
I have an old tweet where I just do like sits watching garbage for 55 minutes of game clock, and the last 5 minutes are close. Oh, this is a great game. No, it wasn't. It just happened to be close at the end, which makes the last few minutes exciting.
Right. Right. All right. Let's close it out quickly. Just give me your top five, your power rankings. Where do you think the league, where is it right now? Like what's what after 2 weeks?
I don't know if I have like an order for this, but my top five teams would be, you know, Chiefs, Rams, would definitely be in there. If Russell Wilson's going to keep playing like this, I'm really bullish on that passing game. I guess I'll put them up in there. Tampa Bay, obviously. I mean, whatever. Tom Brady, get a life, go do something else. I can't believe that this dude is leading the league in touchdowns. I mean, I know he played the Falcons last week, but he's 44 years old.
It's like, insane, man.
What's going on here? It's craziness. And for my fifth team, this is tough. I think I'm still on the Packers. I think I'm still there.
Packers all the way up there, huh? Wow.
I don't know. I just believe in Aaron Rodgers. Also, I didn't really think about this that much. Actually, no, I'm going to replace the Packers with the Broncos. Sure. Why not?
Like it. Like, I'm going to go Bucks, Chiefs, Rams, Niners. That last spot, man, it's
tough.
I'm not liking the Bills right now. Seahawks, no. I'm going to go with Arizona Cardinals just to give some props to the Forverts column.
That works.
And what was thrown out there. I mean, yeah, you're right. Who knows if that style play is sustainable over a period of time, but they're fun right now, and it's week two peril ranking, so we can do whatever we want with it. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will be back Thursday, I guess. Thursday evening. We'll pick some games.
We'll find someone to come on with us.
Yeah, we'll talk to somebody about something football related. Have a good time. Find us on Twitter. He's at Forverts. I'm at Chris Corman. Read us at For the Win. And you got anything else, Chuck? Any closing thoughts?
Check out my Le Batard performance yesterday.
Yeah.
I had a good time. And Dan said that I was good, which means a lot to me because he's like my favorite content creator.
I mean, he's what we all want to be. I mean, it's just fantastic. So, all right. Thank you. And we will talk to you next time. Take care.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports.